Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
To this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy, wearegolding.com. How are you? I hope you are good. This week, the lovely Pogman joined me. I was with Pogman a little while ago and he was opening up to me a bit about his personal life. And I asked him to come on the podcast because, number one, he's an amazing storyteller. And he loves a chat, so he's perfect for a podcast. But also, he really speaks very well about things that have happened to him. You know how some people can just articulate really well and describe feelings? And basically, in a nutshell, we spoke about his music career, becoming a DJ, travelling the world, how he dealt with that when he wakes up really early every day. He's one of those strange people that can't lie in. His mother had suffered from alcoholism and took her own life, how he dealt with all that, and he's still dealing with all that, and then how he then became sober himself after a few things that happened that he wasn't happy with, including he gave up drugs before he gave up drinking. I'm like, how did... What? When he was young. But if you hear this story, oh my God, it's not funny, but it is. Some of the things people do baffle me. But anyway, he's got a lot of stories. I've told him he needs to write a book, actually, because he remembers everything as well. Like, he remembers everything. When I was always aware of what I was doing while I was doing it, but the next day, I don't remember anything. Like, my friend will... quite a lot, actually. She'd be like, oh, do you remember that night when we did this and went here? And I have no recollection of it whatsoever. But I was worried that it might have been the amount of drugs that I took when I was younger. But I don't think it is. I think I just have got a really bad memory, because I'm pretty sure if it was the drugs, then Pogman wouldn't remember anything anyway, either. But yes, I hope you enjoy. So it's split into two, because we had a good old chat for quite a long time. The first episode, so today's episode, is more about his music career and how he got into DJing and how it became a career for him. And then next week, it's more about the drugs and drink and, yeah, what happened to his mum and everything. So, yeah, it's cheery. It's not, obviously, we speak about very heavy stuff, but he's a very cheery person. So, yeah, but anyway, I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you in a bit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm all right. I know. I haven't got up. Where the kids have been away, and since the dog left, I've been purposely lining because I had to keep getting up early for the dog.
Yeah.
Where it's the school holidays, I was like, I don't have to get up. So I've
been sleeping
until like 9 o'clock. It's been
shocking, mate. 9 o'clock. That's like, you're like a teenager, mate.
Hello. When you were a teen, I used to sleep till like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
See, I've never been like that. I was like, I've always been an early bird, like my whole life. Like
even
if I get to sleep at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, I'll still wake up at like 8 o'clock. And like if I get to sleep at my normal time, which is, I'm a proper old man. Like if my schedule at the moment, the last few weeks it's been bad, like the worst it's ever been. I've been falling asleep at like just after 9 o'clock and waking up at like 5 a.m.
Oh my god!
But I'm usually on about a 10:36 sort of schedule.
That's not too bad.
No, because like,
but
I like getting up early though. I'm the most productive at like first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, I'll clean my house and I'll do everything I need to do before I even start my day.
Yeah. No, I do hear that. I wish that I could get up earlier. But I'm all right when it's light outside, but when it's dark, I really don't like.
Yeah, I hate the winter. I hate the winter so much. I don't mind the cold. I just don't like the dark.
Yeah, I don't like the dark.
Like waking up and it's dark and then literally by like 4 o'clock it's dark. It's just like shocking.
Yeah. I don't like that. I couldn't.
It's weird as well, even though I'm only like 2 hours north of you, like the change in the darkness is shocking. Like, you probably get an extra like 20 minutes of sunlight than us, like in the deep winter.
Really?
Yeah. It's mental.
What, in the morning or the evening?
So the sun will go down later for you guys.
Because my friend that lives in Preston says that her evenings are lighter in the summer than they are.
Maybe it's the other way around then. Oh, mate.
Because I was always like, that's really weird because we're in the same country, but obviously she's like 5 hours north.
Yeah, she's like 2 hours north of me even. So like,
she's
some way away from you because you're like what? You're not north. Which part of London are you?
East London.
So you're like... Yeah, okay, so you're still quite far down then. Because, like, once you get to, like, sort of North London way, like Milton Keynes and stuff, like, basically out of London then. You're proper Londoner now, aren't you, Ames?
Proper London, yeah. Well, I'm Essex, actually.
Oh, that's even more, mate.
Everyone's like, you live in Essex now, and I'm like, I don't live in Essex. South Woodford has an E18 postcode, so it is London. It's London.
So Essex
I'm on
is...
tube.
Yeah, true. Is Essex not... Is Essex overground then?
Well, Upminster is on the tube, and that's an Epping's Essex. Is Epping Essex or is Epping Waltham Forest?
There's too many places in London, mate.
There's too many places. We have got the tube in Essex, but I'm just very much like, I live in London.
So you're born and bred in Essex, though?
In Essex. Yeah.
Fair play. Bromford, bloody hell.
Bromford and Basildon.
Basildon.
The best two places.
The only reason I know about Basildon is from that one video of that drum and bass MC all them years ago. Was it MC Beefy or something? Oh, it was like...
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't even know whether they were like real MCs, but it was like somebody at a DMB like rave, like just doing like interviews or with a microphone or whatever. And it was these two lads. One was called MC Beefy. I can't remember what the other lad was called, but like they were just off their tits completely. Like the one was MCing, it was fucking hilarious. But the one lad was like shouting like Basildon boys or something. And I was just like, okay, send. Like, and then so my early sort of introductions to London. Obviously, I knew what London was growing up, but it was Bottom because they were from Hammersmith, like watching Bottom. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So, like, a lot of the stuff that they would mention, because he would mention, like, Bromley and, like, Romford and, like, all these different places. And that was literally it. Like, other than that, I didn't even go to London until, like, later on in life, like,
really? At all.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I hadn't been to London properly until I was probably a teenager, you know. Maybe even a little bit later.
Unless you've got plans to sightsee or do stuff, you've got really no need to come in, have you? And
well, exactly. And before I was like, I mean, I'm 34 now, so when I was like a teenager, there was nothing to see in London. I mean, there was, but you know what I mean. Like, you weren't. And my dad's not like the sort of person who's like, oh, let's go see Big Ben. My dad's like,
yeah,
I'm going to the fucking football, and you know, so there's no point reason to get to London, and then.
I noticed your Wolves shirt.
Yeah, I'm a big
Have you signed Ronaldo?
No. Nah. We signed a player called Nunes, who's like from Portugal. We basically only signed Portuguese players.
Oh, really? Well, that's like, fair enough.
Our whole club since we got bought like years ago has just been like Portuguese, basically.
Oh, really?
There's the constant joke of like, oh, Wolves is just Portugal. And I'm like, man, if we get the players, I don't care at all.
Yeah.
Like, so, what's your allegiances, if there was one?
Spurs. Oh,
really? We're playing you on Saturday.
Spurs. Oh, Wolf, really?
Wolves Spurs on Saturday, mate.
Oh.
I'll text you some stick.
Yeah. That's proper... the only reason I like football is the stick.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have the banter.
Are, everyone's Arsenal fans. Everyone's an Arsenal fan. Or West Ham. Mm. So, I don't really care about football. I get involved with the World Cup.
Yeah.
I find that exciting, but day to day, just I enjoy it and I like it for my dad.
Yeah.
But I don't really care. I would love it if Spurs actually did win something because it would make him so happy.
That's the thing.
That
would
be lovely.
That was me as a kid, really, because when I was growing up, I was more into like skateboarding and like BMX. You know, I was basically a little griever into like rock music and like skating and stuff. So, but football was always on like the sort of fringes of my life because my dad's a massive football fan, so is my brother. My brother's a United fan, my dad's a Wolves fan.
Oh, and, my God.
Yeah.
Why? Glory Hunter?
Nah, he's been it since we was literally, like, babies. Like his whole life. So he's, like, he's one of the... I wouldn't say I don't respect other fans, but fair play to him. He's had a season ticket nearly 10 years now, and he drives to Manchester every home game, like, you know.
Oh. My God.
Even though they're dog shit for the last so many years, like he still goes and he gets stick constantly off like us and our friendship group because we've got a little mixture, but most of us are Wolves fans. But we've got like a Spurs fan, we've got Chelsea fan, we've got an Arsenal fan, Newcastle fan, like so. But yeah, my brother gets some right fucking stick, man. But fair play to him. But yeah, so it was always on the fringes in my life, and then as I got a little bit older, it was when I started touring, really, you know, because like football was like my little bit of home, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I had something to sort of hold on to,
and I was like, and then I would be a dickhead waking up at like whatever time, wherever I was in the world, whatever time zone I was on, I'd wake up to watch a Wolves match.
Really?
Yeah. So obviously, when I was living in Philadelphia for a while, if we was ever on the early kickoff, it was 7 o'clock in the morning kickoff. But obviously that's perfect
that's not
for me. Too bad. Mr. Early Bird. Yeah. But the good thing is
there's, by then.
Exactly. And there's a pub that they used to open to watch all the games. It'd be open at 7 o'clock in the morning, so which was
perfect. It Paddy's Pub?
It was an Irish bar, of course. Like I mean, you can always count on the Irish bar wherever you are in the world, mate. But like carry on, mate, sorry.
I was just gonna say, what led you to music?
So basically, I mean, I've told this story a million times, so anybody who does listen, I'm sorry if you've heard it before, but, like, this is literally what happened, and it's, like, the same, and it's never changed. So when I was a kid, obviously, music was always in our house. It weren't, like, massive, like, way of life or anything, but, like, nobody played instruments or anything, but they just enjoyed music massively. Like, my dad was always really into, like, sort of Northern Soul and, like, punk and stuff like that. They were, like, his sort of... And then, like, the standard dad music. My dad's, like, 60, so the standard stuff, like the Jam and the Special, you know, like that, like all the mod era and the Scar era and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then mom was your just average mom of like Celine Dion and fucking Madonna and, you know, just 90s mom music, basically. So, and then my brother, he was like into like garage and stuff. So like, because he was like at the perfect age for it. My brother's 5 years older than me. So I sort of like 90, okay. I mean, when did garage start? Sort of 96, 97 maybe, yeah. Maybe a little bit later. So he was at the perfect age of like sort of that music. And I, by that time, I was like basically a little greb, like listening to like Limp Bizkit and like all that sort of stuff and Slipknot and wearing my baggy jeans and shit like that. But
have you watched that Woodstock thing on Netflix? Yeah,
it's crazy, isn't it? Fucking absolutely hell, crazy, yes. Mate.
Yeah.
Like, what
and
a shit show.
I don't remember that happening.
I think...
I was that around, do you know what I mean? But I think the main... I don't remember.
I think the main thing is more that, like, obviously we didn't get news like that back then, did we? Like, that would have been, like, small fry news and we didn't have social media and Twitter.
Yeah,
and...
I didn't think about that.
So, like, it would have been, especially back then, 99, was that, like, near enough the turn of, like, sort of when terrorism supposedly started in the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's when there would have been scaremongering us with that shit instead, so we wouldn't have learned better.
True,
rather than anything else that's going on.
Concerts going wrong.
Exactly. But, yeah, so I was listening to, like, sort of rock music and, again, my brother was into sort of Oasis and all that sort of stuff purely just because of when he grew up. So that was, I always heard that sort of music as well, like Britpop and all that stuff. And then, so I remember my cousin, like I'm really close with my cousins. We've always grew up, we're basically like brothers. There's like about six of us, like six lads who always like sort of stuck together. And one of them got some decks. I don't know why. He was never going to learn to DJ. I think he was just like... It was cool to have some vinyl decks, basically. And at the same time, they were getting into, like, Pure Garage. It was when Pure Garage 1 and stuff had come out, like the original Pure Garages. And like, So every time I was around theirs, which was pretty much every day after school or, like, every day in the holidays and stuff like that, they'd just be, like, blasting that shit out because he had, like, my cousin loved his system. He had, like, the separates and he had some, like, jam house speakers and all that stuff, like. I mean, you know how it is, mate. Back then, if you had all that shit, that was the stuff to have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I remember listening to the garage tunes and I'd be like, this is shit. But at the same time, there was one thing that I always loved about it, and it was the bass lines, just the way the bass lines were in the songs. Like, I'll never forget listening to, like, Spin Spin Sugar for the first time, and I think it was on Pure Garage 1, maybe. I was like, man, this is actually pretty sick, you know? Like, I actually quite like this. So anyway, I carried on being a fucking Grebo anyway for years. And that's when I went really deep into it, like, got into, like, death metal and, like, grindcore. Started a death metal band. I was in a band for years and stuff like that. Just
what
after
did you play?
I was a vocalist.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Proper, like, heavy.
Did you sing or...
Nah. Yeah, there was no singing at all. I cannot sing. I can't even fucking whistle, mate. I can write music, but I can't even whistle in tune. Trust me, it's terrible. But... But then it was sort of it was just after that, it was when, like, LimeWire and, like, Napster and all that was, like, buzzing. And, like, obviously we'd just got the internet. So this is, like, the turn of, like, the millennium, like, early 2000s. And then all of a sudden we've got a computer, we've got this thing called the internet, and then, like, we've got this, like, app or whatever it was. It's like, oh, yeah, you can just type in any song and you can download it for free. I was like, what? And obviously, like, no matter what anybody says, I know it's piracy and all that, but we was all fucking doing it. And anybody who denies it is a liar. Like, and then you'd end up
I had a CD burner.
Yeah, exactly. So you just make... just download anything and just make, like... It was basically like us making, like, mixtapes, basically, weren't it? Like, all your favourite songs on a CD.
Yeah.
Get your little black marker out and write it as small as you can around the thing about which track was which. Or if it was really cool, you'd even get a piece of paper and, like, give it a proper case and everything.
Yeah.
But, but yeah, so when LimeWire come out and stuff like that, Napster and that, like, that's when my brother and I started to hear, like, drum and bass and jungle and stuff for the first time. So, like, I'll never forget, like, hearing, like, early, like, Aphrodite stuff and Mickey Finn and all them sort of people. And, like, obviously being from Wolves, I always knew who Goldie was.
Yeah.
but I never sort of like delved into it. Like he was always he was always a name that like came up, and but obviously I completely missed his big era when like Timeless and sort of all that was out, because that would have been, I would have been like 5-6 years old when like But then again, like I remember hearing like Jungle and drum bass, and again I was like, man, the bass lines in this are so sick. Like it's really, and I remember we got like, it was on LimeWire, got like a version of Skibidi's Street Fighter MC that must have been ripped from just like some live night or something, because the quality of it was such dog shit. But again, I was just like, oh, he's MCing about like Street Fighter, like a computer game. I was like, that's sick, like, because I was still young. I was like, that's really cool. And then anyway, I carried on. So that was always still there because of my brother and my cousins and stuff. And then it finally got to the point where our band, we'd been playing like sort of locally and around England and stuff like that. And we met another band from Swindon called, they were called From the Carnival of Horrors. My band was called I Am Monster. And
oh, I like that
name. Yeah. And we'd become good friends with these lads. And then like, sort of as the bands were dying down and we weren't really doing it anymore, we kept in touch, and they used to come up to us and we'd sort of go out and stuff. So slowly started getting into like house music and stuff like that, like going to like God's Kitchen and like Global Gathering and stuff like that, because it was just like the age I was at. I was sort of 16, 17. I'd found drugs, like found house music. It was just like, and then some of the lads had come up from Swindon. They were from, that band were from, and one of the lads, Ryan, still speak to him like to this day. He's a lovely lad. He bought some decks. Seems like the turning points in my life always came from somebody buying some decks. Yeah. So like he brings like these decks up, and he's like, oh, listen to this like thing called dubstep. I was like, oh, what is it? And he had, I think he had one of either Banger's early releases or one of Scream's early releases. I can't remember which one it was. But he put it on, and I was just like, holy shit. I was like, this is everything I loved about like garage and drum and bass, and it's just that. Because, I mean, early dubstep was just about the bass line. And, like, I mean, obviously, as I got more into it and explored it more, I realised that, obviously, there was a lot more to it. But I was like, it really is sort of concentrated just around that bass line. And then, literally, from then, I was just fucking hooked completely. So I remember getting, like, Banger's, like, Diary of an Afro Warrior. I remember Scream, obviously, released his self-titled. And then, like anything that I really get into, I just like deep dive into it completely.
Yeah.
Like I've always been that sort of person where if I like something, I'll just like completely jump into it. So I was like, yeah, everything was just like dubstep, dubstep, dubstep. I was still listening to house, but dubstep was sort of taking over exactly what I was listening to. And then the next big thing that happened was Casper and Rusko released their Fabric Live. And then, I mean, in the dubstep world, that was a big, big turning point for, like, everybody, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Because, I mean, like, you must remember when that happened, like, because what I think it was is, like, before that, it was mostly just, like, so it was, the bass lines weren't as gritty. Like, there were some, like, Cokie was making some bangers, and, like, you know, Chrome Star had had a few, and even Scream, and it was there, but then, like, Casper and Rusko like did Fabric Live, and it was like, oh, the mid-range bass was getting cool. Rusko was doing his thing, which was like still sick to this day. And obviously Casper's stuff was amazing as well. And then that was when I was like, right, I'm going to fucking try and make dubstep. I'm going to try and do it myself. So I remember going to a night, actually. I remember one of the reasons I started producing is I went to a night, and it was Benga was headlining. I think this was probably about 2008, maybe. Benga was headlining. I swear Trolley Snatcher played, but I could be getting them two nights mixed up, because I don't know whether that might have been a tad too early for Trolley. I don't know, but I could be wrong. But I remember watching the DJs, and I remember, like, I loved, like, 90% of the music, but there were certain songs that would build up, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, and then it'd drop. I'd be like, oh, I don't know whether I want...
Yeah.
In my head, I didn't want it to drop like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, the only way I could change that is by making it myself.
Yeah.
So I remember getting my laptop and getting a little cracked version of Reason. And I made my first ever dub. It took me like fucking
Did
so long.
Did you know how to use it, or were you literally just sat down and like, didn't have a clue?
Just sat down. Yeah. And this was like, this was probably before YouTube was really, really popping. Obviously, YouTube was around in 2007 and 8, but like it weren't.
But it's not like it is now where anything you want.
It weren't like, I need to learn how to tie my shoelace, like YouTube, like anything. So there weren't many like tutorials or anything out there. But yeah, so I grinded and grinded and grinded and learned how to fucking do it. And I remember, I'll never forget, my first track I ever made was called Yellow Dub Marine. Like, what an absolute twat of a name. Mate, I know. And at the time, I obviously thought it was the fucking coolest play on words ever. And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, honestly. And I didn't even know what to do with it, though. Like, I didn't know what to put it out or, like, because obviously you couldn't just put stuff on. Was Spotify even around in 2008? Like, God knows.
I don't know. Was MySpace
MySpace was around.
Or
yeah,
that finished.
I'm pretty sure MySpace was around because Pogband definitely had a MySpace.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Where does the name come from?
Do you remember Pogs? Remember the little collectible like discs?
Yes.
Yeah. Literally from that.
Oh.
Like that. I remember. So I was in my bedroom with my best friend, Lee. He lives in London now, actually. And I wanted something. I wanted a name that wasn't too sick. Because this is probably the logical next step in the story. Because I'd made Yellow Dub Marine, fucking banger. And it was the worst song ever as well, mate. It was basically just a kick and a snare with like a womp, 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 womp. Like, I don't know how to like do anything else. But I was like,
yeah.
That's basically dubstep, isn't it? I've cracked it. I'm going to be fucking famous, yeah? You know, Fabric will be ringing me tomorrow to do the next Fabric Live off the back of this. But, so I remember being like, well, I've made a song. I want to put it somewhere. And it makes sense that you said MySpace, because MySpace would have been where I would have put it, definitely. And because remember, you could have your little thing at the top where you could put a few songs on and stuff.
Well, I used MySpace because I used to sing.
Yeah.
And that just feels like it was such a long time ago. But equally, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago. But just like the way things have moved since that happened, that was such a big deal, wasn't it? When you had MySpace and you could put your music out there.
Oh, it's insane.
You know, people
top eight friends.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Pissing everybody off. Why are you not in your top eight? Oh, fuck off. Who cares? Like now. But back then, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
Luckily, I wasn't at school when MySpace happened. I imagine MySpace, like when it was in its heyday, school and MySpace must have caused so many fucking arguments, man.
But when did it? Because I'm thinking it must have been, when was I working at Notion? Like 2004, maybe?
So that was the year I left school. So maybe I didn't have a MySpace. I think I might have got MySpace like that year, maybe. Or maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then did only people that made music have MySpace?
Everyone had it. You could have a personal page. You could have a personal page or an artist page, I think. So, but it was like, carry on, sorry.
Oh, no, go on.
It's mad that nobody's ever like sort of gone really down that route on social media anymore, where you can like really personalise your page. And remember, you could have a song that just played when you went on, just started playing when you went on somebody's profile. And like nobody ever really like carried that on, which was, I know MySpace tried to have a resurgence a few times. Did Justin Timberlake not buy it at one point and try and bring back? Yeah, I think so.
Maybe. But I suppose it's once Facebook happened, that was it, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. I held out on Facebook for years. I didn't get a Facebook for so long. I was like, fuck that, I don't need one.
It's not, I literally just go on it because I work in social media, so I have to kind of be on it. But I just literally go on, see my memories. That's all I want to do, because I just have all pictures of the kids when they were babies.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't scroll on it or.
Well, anything. I another part of the story, which we'll probably talk about later, is the day I decided to go sober, like this last time round. I deleted Facebook off my phone the same day. And, okay. I've never had it since. Like, so I've still got a Facebook profile, but I mean, in them three, it's been just over 3 years now. Like, I've probably been on Facebook on my laptop 10 times in 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm on it for like 20 seconds and I'm like, why the fuck am I back on here? Straight back off.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
Long one. Yeah. It was a great idea and it's spiraled to what it is now, which is just.
Have you seen that they've handed over a conversation that a young girl had when she was trying to sort out having an abortion in America? Facebook have handed over her messages to
the
authorities.
What, because of what? Because of this new.
Because she was talking about getting an abortion or arranging. Or I can't remember. I don't. My friend sent it to me.
It's so fucking wrong.
That's
I mean, the whole thing in America at the moment with the abortion thing is just disgusting. But like, that's literally a whole other conversation.
Scary.
Oh, it's fucked, mate. It's literally, that's exactly what it is. It's scary.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and
really
not
scary. But then, to be fair, I wouldn't have any serious conversations on that kind of platform. But that's I'm 40.
Yeah.
Four, and. I wouldn't be risking that, but if I was a young girl in that kind of state anyway, you wouldn't even imagine that someone could be reading your.
Well, exactly. Like that, and like, we've got to remember that, like, social media to them is like life. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's where all their friends are, that's where everybody they speak to is. Like, I mean, it baffles me, like, what kids are like. And I hate to sound like that old bitter bastard, and I always do, but like, stuff I experience with like kids nowadays, it just blows my mind. I'll never forget a girlfriend I was with at the time. She had a little brother, lovely little lad. His friend like rode his bike round to the house, knocked on the door, and was like, "Oh, you're coming on FIFA online?" And he was like, "Yeah, I'll be on in 5 minutes." Got back on his bike, rode back to his house for them to then just talk like through a microphone. And I was like, why did you not just like, go in the garden and play football? Like, but like, look, I understand like kids love gaming and all that sort of stuff. But like, and we're old and it's only like where my dad used to say to me when I was a kid, like, oh, go outside and play. Like, you know, when fucking the SNES first come out and got my first PlayStation and shit like that. But like, I think it's got to the level now where like, it could potentially be, what's the word, sort of like very bad for like kids later in life.
Yeah.
Because I don't know whether you've noticed, but I think social interactions between kids nowadays are a lot different to when we was younger.
I don't know. Obviously I'm thinking of my kids, but my youngest is still very much, she'll play. But then, that being said, she's addicted to her iPad.
Yeah.
And when her friends come over, even, they still always resort back to going on the iPad because they're so used to that. And they've got a room full of toys that she won't get rid of. But I'm like, but you never really play with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they are, but it's hard, isn't it? Because she is playing on the, she's not just watching stuff. Like, they play games and it's creative and it's.
That's what it's just a tricky, like, I mean, I can't really comment on it much because I've got no kids, but, like, obviously I've got a lot of, technically they're my cousins, but, like, I call them, like, my nieces and nephews because just of how close we all are and stuff. But, like, I don't know, and I even experienced it in the music world, and this is of, like, no offence to any of the artists, like, but, like, I noticed, like, when you'd get, like, very young artists, sort of like backstage at a show or backstage at a festival, like it was really tricky for them to like socially interact the way that we would because they're so used to just everything being on a computer. Like they've never really like, for instance, I mean, we just did Rampage. Obviously you saw what it was like backstage. Yeah, everybody's having a laugh and blah, blah, blah. But like, I've been in situations where like there's kids who like, and I feel bad for them. And I feel like they're sort of a product of like what the last sort of 10 years has been like with how you have to be like sort of on social media. And the problem is it's got so many positives, but so many negatives as well. And it's just a massive catch-22. Like I was actually having a conversation the other day with somebody about obviously you'd never be able to find this data at all, but like it would be interesting to see if you could compare how many lives social media has saved versus how many lives social media has sort of technically cost. Because there's going to be kids out there, not even just kids, just people in general, who have like been pushed to the edge of suicide and stuff like that because of shit that's happened online. Like, we've all saw it. Yeah, we've all saw it on the news and stuff. But then the flip side to that is there's going to be kids out there who never had any friends, never felt like they belonged anywhere. And then all of a sudden they find this little pocket of a community on the internet, and it's pretty much saved their life.
Yeah.
So it would be really interesting to sort of see that comparison. But as I said, it's like data that's probably just impossible to ever figure out.
Social media has helped me. I live in this house because of social media.
Yeah.
I've got my job with Paul because of social media.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of stuff. A
lot of positives.
That's happened. But equally, I'm fully aware of the negatives of it. And I'm hoping that by the time my daughters are going to be very affected by it, it won't be as, like, with Facebook's dying out, isn't it?
And massively.
It's like always, it's the next thing, isn't it? And
like TikTok's obviously the thing at the moment, isn't it, for kids? Yeah. Like,
yeah, that's all it's all I'd watch is TikTok. But it's so funny. They keep coming up with all these recipes and how you should cut a mango properly and just all this shit. But it's like they're learning stuff. I mean, it's all, you know,
Do you ever see the ones where it's like, this is how you should do something, and you're like, no, it's not. Like, there's a much easier, normal way to do it. But like, I watched some crazy thing the other day about some person being like, oh, if you've got a bottle of water, you can do this, this and this, and do this, and tie this here and cut this, and then you've got a cup. It's like, just drink out the fucking bottle.
Yeah.
You've got like done a full like Blue Peter session to fucking, when you could have just drank out the fucking bottle, get your sticky back plastic and your PVA glue and all that shit. And it's like, what are you fucking doing, man? But yeah, such like just the internet in general. I think the internet in general was the best / worst thing that ever happened to the world.
Yeah.
Because again, very similar to you, like I know for a fact my career got to where it got to purely because of social. Well, not purely, but you know, social media played a massive part in it. I wouldn't have met half the people I know. I wouldn't have met, so I got half the contacts. I wouldn't have been able to send my music to people who ended up signing it.
So what happened then after Yellow Dub Marine?
Oh shit! Okay, yeah, back to that. So yeah, so I was looking for my name. I remember Funk Casey's name was sort of popping. Mm. Like he was Jay was coming through. So I was like, oh, you don't really have to have like a really serious name. Like you can still have something that's a little bit fun. And I don't know where it even came from, but just out of the blue, I'm pretty sure my mate Lee was just like, what about Pogman? And I was like, actually, I like it straight. And I just literally just went for it. Like, I didn't even really think about it. And then, obviously, my name is P0, G-M-A-N. Because at the time, there was a few artists who I liked floating around who had, like, numbers in their name. Like, number 9 was one of the big ones, and it was like, there was a 3 in it and a 6 somewhere. Like later on, for like Googling purposes and that, I fucking regretted it. Like years down, I was like, why the fuck did I put a fucking 0 in my name? But then we turned it into a branding.
Yeah.
Like the 0 became like the sort of logo, and we branded a lot of stuff around it. So in the long run, it weren't too bad. But yeah, so anyway, Yellow Dub Marine is probably on. Not anymore. I fucking wish it was. I'd love to listen to it again. But it was.
Have you still got it?
Nah, that's like, there's a certain era of like very, very early Pogman that I've just not got. Like, sort of from my first release, which was 2010, afterwards, it's pretty well like catalogued and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's some very early stuff that like, I honestly don't know where it could be, mate. Like, because it was made. I made the jump from PC to Mac pretty early, and like all the original stuff would have been on PC on like Fruity Loops and stuff. And
once
I switched to Logic, that was it then. But
yeah,
I remember just from being in the community, like obviously delving more into the dubstep community and like, you know, groups on Facebook and this, that, and the other. There was a label in America called Dank and Dirty Dubs of a guy who ran it called Sashwat. And I started to speak to this guy quite a lot, just sort of, you know, he was releasing some music I liked and I was sending him stuff I was making. And I ended up making a tune called Dank and Dirty Dubs because I think that was just in my head at the time, blah, blah, blah. And like, and I sent it to him and he was like, oh, this is fucking amazing. He's like, can I sign it to my label? I was like, well, of course you can. So that was like my first genuine release. And obviously it came out on an American label. In reality, like, obviously, it wasn't... How do I say this without sounding like a dick? Like, it would have been better in terms of where dubstep came from and blah, 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 to probably do it on a UK label. But I saw it as, man, somebody on the other side of the world, like, likes my music. Like, amazing.
Yeah.
And then, so that came out. The Pogman name started to sort of get noticed, but just online and, like... very small communities. It weren't like in anywhere near to the point where like shit was going to start happening for me. And being from Wolverhampton, obviously Birmingham's just up the road, and there was a label from Birmingham called Kronos Records, and they released like really heavy stuff. I remember they were like the guys who sort of discovered like Eptic, who is now like massive, like probably one of the biggest artists in dubstep and fucking amazingly talented at what he does. Lovely dude. But I really wanted to be on Kronos Records. Like that was like the next step for me.
Yeah.
And I was probably just an annoying dickhead because I just emailed so much music. Literally like make a song, email it. And they're always just like, yeah, we don't think it fits. Like, fair play to them, they'd always answer, like, you know.
That's nice.
Yeah, because nowadays it's sort of common that, like, say not getting an answer basically means no. Like,
yeah.
Whereas back then, like, they were always sort of like answering me back and stuff like that. So that was always really nice. And I finally like wrote this EP and I'd really sort of found my sound, and it was basically like I was like heavily influenced by, like, you know, Jake's from Bristol.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so I was heavily influenced by Jake's stuff, really influenced by like Cokey and like that sort of like that's that wet, wobbly sound, like, and stuff like that. So I kind of figured out what the Pogman sound was going to be. And I thought, like, obviously, just like clockwork, obviously I'm going to send it to Kronos and see what they think, because I've sent them fucking 7 million other songs in the last, like, fucking 6 months. And then I get an email back and they're like, right, we're about to launch a sister label called Styx Recordings, and, like, this is the sound we really want to push. Like, would you like to be the sort of first EP on the label? And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, of course I fucking would. And so straight away I'm like... technically, I'm not signed to Kronos, but technically I am. So I was like, I'll fucking take it. And the good thing is, this is sort of a, not a little claim to fame, because I know Michael and I fucking love him. I've known him for years. But like Michael Eptic, the lad, he's obviously killing it right now, doing really well. He's making stuff with like very, very, very big artists. He does everything himself. He's completely in-house. All his artwork, his animation is fucking insane. Got like these little
characters. How does he sleep?
I don't think he does, but he's like insanely talented. But he actually drew my first ever album cover, like the EP cover for that Styx. And it's literally just like a cartoon version of me, just like leaning against a building. Like, so it's nice to think that I'll always like forever have that like little bit of artwork from Michael, which is fucking great, because I love the dude and I'm massively happy for his success and stuff. But like, so, yeah, that came out. There was a dude at the time on YouTube called Salad something. I can't even remember now. But what he used to do is he used to, like, put movie clips to dubstep, make it, like, work really well. And he did, like, so the lads at Kronos, Ant and George, fucking legends, love them. They knew this dude and they got him to do the sort of promo for my EP. And it was all from The Matrix. And, like, it was all really synced really well. So that, like, popped really hard. The tracks did really well. Like, well, what I would consider really well, you know, not, like, numbers that people do nowadays. Like, But I remember, like, Rusko played one of my songs, and, like, that was, like, oh, my God. And then... So that was, like, the sort of start, real start of it. And then that's when I started to get, like, booked and stuff. Remember, like, my...
So did you DJ?
Oh, yeah, shit, yeah. So, like, along this... So a big thing that I missed is... When I wanted to DJ, so, like, around the time, probably in between Yellow Dubmarine and the EP that had just got released... would have been I wanted to obviously DJ, but it was hard to get bookings and stuff because I obviously had like nothing to sort of you know show people or there was no there was no reason to book me really. I was just another DJ. So I taught myself to DJ. I got some cheap sort of Denon CDJs, taught myself to DJ. And then we basically said, me and my friend at the time, was like, oh, look, why don't we just put a night on, like a dubstep night on in Wolverhampton? Like, if we want to be DJs, like, let's try and sort of do it ourselves. And so we had our first ever night was called Recession because it was during the 2008, that recession, I think. I can't remember anyway, but like basically this one club in it was barely a club, it was a fucking pub basically. They had a room upstairs and they were like, yeah, you can use it on like a Thursday night, I think. Like, yeah, you can use it on a Thursday night. It's like, we can't pay you or anything, but blah, blah, blah. And like, so. Yeah. So we basically started playing dubstep. And like the first night, I think the first one we did, there was probably like three people there. Second one we did, there was like couple more people there. Then it didn't really get popping, but it was doing like okay. And then it got to the point where it was like, fuck this, like I think they got to the point where they're like, yeah, if you get people coming in, obviously we'll give you a bit of money. And I'll never forget the one night they gave us £5 between the two of us. And I was just like I was like, are you fucking kidding us? And I'll never forget.
Oh, I know.
Exactly. And like I'll never forget the woman who like basically like I don't know if she was even the manager, but she was a fucking bitch manager. Like she hated us. And I think it was more of an insult that she'd done that.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget because it was my mate Jace and like I don't really speak to him that much anymore, but like I thought he was a fucking lovely lad. Very, very good producer. He never really went anywhere with it, but he was really good at sort of like garage and like that sort of stuff. But I'll never forget because we lived together at the time and it was like, we've got enough money for basically a taxi home or we can just get some food and walk home. So I'll never forget, there was this shitty little pizza shop in Wolves where you could get a pizza for like £2.50. So we basically got pizza each and just fucking walked home. So after that, we were like, you know what, fuck this, like, fuck that place. And then we had an idea for a night. Baisse-moi, it was called. And we somehow just got in with the right people. And, like, they offered us, they were like, yeah, you can have, like, this night a month at this club, like a monthly thing. Like, okay, then sick. And I'll never forget, we did the first night and, like, we promoed it really well and all that. And it just fucking popped. Like, it just worked. And I think it's because we were the only club that was really concentrating on, like, bass music. Like everywhere else was still playing just like house and just like, you know, your standard sort of dance, like clubby music. And I'll never forget the first night, it was fucking heaving. And they were like, yeah, we'll basically give you the door money. Like you could basically keep all the door money because we'll make money on the bar.
Yeah.
And I think the first night we made like £2,000 between like four of us. And it was like, oh shit. Like, so then we started doing more. We're doing it monthly, and I'll never forget. Like we got to the point where we were like overselling the nightclub. Like we were cramming like 200 people too many in the club, and it was just like we were making good money. We were having a fucking sick time. We started booking artists, and like it was really getting good then. So that's when I started to make some really early sort of friendships with people as well. Like I remember I booked like Shivers really early on, who's now like one of my fucking closest friends, and like. We booked back then. I'm pretty sure we booked like Suck Night. We booked like a lot of the early like heavier dudes like Dr. Filth and like I think did Eptic come and play for us? I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, so that started popping. So I started my DJ skills started to get a lot better and stuff like that. And Anyway, that sort of run its course, and then we had to move clubs because something happened with that club, and then the club that we went to wasn't as good, but it was still popping a little bit. And then I'll never forget one of our best friends at the time, Mitch, fucking really good friend of all of us, got absolutely battered in the toilets. Like, I think like 10 blokes like put it on him, like really bad, to the point where I'll never forget. I was walking, I don't know it had happened, the toilet was just downstairs in this new club. And as we're walking, as I'm walking back in, I think I'd been to the door to see if our person on the door was okay, like, you know, because she's taking the money and stuff. And I'm walking back through, and the bouncers have literally got him under one arm each, and he's like just knocked his face. I've never seen anything like it. I was like, what the fuck's happened? Anyway, like, after that happened, we started to get like people in the club that like weren't regulars, and they were just coming because we were, yeah, we were playing like sort of grime and garage and dubstep, and like, and then like less people started coming because they'd saw what happened to Mitch, and like the mood was changing. And in the end, we were just, yeah, like, in the end, we said, you know what, let's just stop doing it. Rather than it get, yeah, to the point where the name's completely tarnished and like people are like, oh yeah, it was shit at the end, like we just said,
yeah,
let's just end, yeah, 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 let's just end it so the name's, yeah, good. So
yeah,
that was the end of our thing. But like at the time, especially in the first club, the club called Koi, it was just so sick. Like, it was such good times. We'd just like sell it out every time. Everybody was having a good time. We never had any trouble.
Yeah.
And it was just sick. So that's where my,
it's
all,
a shame.
It is. But that's where all my DJing,
like,
come,
like,
from.
A real small group.
Yeah.
And they ruin it for everyone.
Exactly.
But it's true. It's just like literally a handful of people. But
I think they ended up, I think the lads ended up getting their comeuppance, because I think somebody knew who they were, and then the name got around and blah blah blah. And yeah, I think because the worst thing is Mitch, the lad who got battered, was like, he wasn't a guy to fuck with. He was like a big dude, and of like, you know, he could look after himself, but obviously there was fucking like 8 to 10 of these dudes who've just like fucked him up. And I don't know whether something's got said in the toilet. You know what it's like out on a night out,
yeah,
people,
yeah,
are drunk,
yeah,
shit,
yeah,
gets said, and
yeah,
and but yeah, so that sort of come to an end, and then that was when I was producing around that time. That would have all been around the time of me learning,
yeah,
to produce and stuff. So by the time my EP came out, like, I could DJ well. I knew exactly what I was doing and stuff like that. I was getting a few bookings here and there. I mean, like, if somebody else was putting a night on in Wolves, or if a friend of ours from Birmingham who we'd let DJ at our night needed somebody to play, like, we'd travel there. But never anything further afield of, like, Wolverhampton or Birmingham.
Yeah.
And then once the EP dropped, I remember the lads at Styx and Kronos were like, oh, we've thrown a night in Newquay. So I got sick, like, I'd love that. So that was technically my first, like, real booking, I would say. And we went down there. And I'll never forget, the night we played Newquay, oh, why were we... No. The night we played Newquay, I think, was the night that lad got shot in... No, he wasn't. That's wrong. I think I played Newquay, and then I went to London to do something. I think I had to play... Do you remember DJ Bailey?
Yes.
Yeah. So...
Yeah.
From being at music college... So during this, I was at music college. I went back to music... Oh, no, mate, honestly, my stories are getting fucking all over the show.
You chose to go to music college to learn. What did you do?
Like,
DJing?
No, creative music technology, yeah. So, like,
okay,
producing. But long story short, basically, I was a carpenter, like, around the time of me learning to DJ and do and, like, start producing myself.
Yeah.
Then I lost my job because of the recession. That makes sense now. So around 2008, I lost my job, or 2009 maybe, and I decided... At that point, I was like, I wasn't great. I wasn't a great carpenter. My dad had a carpentry business. He's had it his whole life. So basically, it was a, dad, give me a job because I'm fucking struggling.
Yeah.
I was shit at it. I was shit at it. I took the piss because it was my dad's company. Like, but I was young and blah, blah, blah. And after I lost that job, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to like school of some sort, because like I want to work in an industry that like I love, and I want to. So I thought, I love music. I want to try and get into that industry. So yeah, as I was at music college, through the college, I managed to get a little bit of work with a company called Hercules. They used to make like DJ controllers and stuff. And like Bailey was like one of their ambassadors. So I think this is the series of events in my head now. I think I've got it right. So I think I played Nuki on the one night, and then the night after, I had to go to London to play a night that Bailey had set up for Hercules. And then I had to go back to Birmingham the night after that to do a radio show with the Styx and Kronos lads, the lads I'd released with. And I'll never forget, the night that we played London was the night that lad got shot in Tottenham.
Oh, by the police?
Yeah, which caused like all the riots, didn't
it? The riots.
Was his name Mark something? I can't remember his name, but yeah. Because I'll never forget, the reason this always sticks in my head. So we played in Brick Lane. I can't remember what the club was called. Yeah. But we played somewhere down there.
93 Feet East?
Nah. Fuck, what was it called?
Vibe Bar.
So we played Vibe Bar. And then with me and... I was with my friend Pascal, who I went to uni with. We were doing the Hercules project together. So we came out. I'll never forget. We came out about 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And like the vibe in London just felt like weird. I mean, like I wasn't really used to the vibe in London because I'd only ever been a couple of times at that point. But it just felt weird because I'm probably like in my early 20s at this point. But I was like, man, like what the fuck's going on? Like, and I remember we got a cab back to our hotel. And when we got to the hotel, there was like fucking police cars, there was just loads of sirens and stuff. And I was just like, of course, when you're in London late at night, you'll hear fucking sirens. But like, this just felt different.
Yeah.
So anyway, I wake up in the morning. Oh no, actually, I think I might have even gone on the internet that night. And I think the news was already breaking that like there'd been a guy shot and killed by the police in London. And I'll never forget because the riots started literally the day after, didn't they? Like, so yeah. I wake up in London, the riots were already sort of in their early stages. And then I go to Birmingham to do the radio show. The riots started in Birmingham that day. And I literally get back to Wolverhampton the day after, and the fucking riots in Wolverhampton, like literally the riots like followed me up the fucking country as I was travelling back. But like, yeah, that's just always a thing that stuck in my mind because I couldn't tell you when it was exactly, but it was probably around 2011 maybe, I think.
I had a baby because I went to my mum and dad's in Essex.
Yeah.
Because I think it must have been the second day, but because it was spreading out and I lived right near to our high street.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I just didn't want to be in a position where I was confronted when I had a baby at home.
Definitely.
You know, because it was just all spiralling and I thought it just takes a bunch of dickhead. I was completely in support of the riots because what happened was absolutely terrible.
Definitely.
But it's, you know, sometimes people just jump on the bandwagon, don't they? And I just thought it might just get some people trying their luck. And my house was literally behind the house, the high street. And yeah. I thought, you just don't know.
You've got to be careful. You've got to.
Exactly. So it would have been, Lola was born 2011. So
makes sense.
It would have been 2011.
Yeah, yeah.
2012, maybe.
It was just a weird one, weren't it? Because, like, it's like most of the fucking riots and gatherings that happen in this country, like, the reason they start is for a decent cause that probably people need to be sort of like raising their voice about. But then it always gets to a point where it's just like, okay, now there's a group just ruining it for fucking everybody.
Yeah.
It's just like anything, really. There's always that one group. Just like
the few people.
Yeah, just like our night, those fucking dickheads who beat our friend up, ruined it for everyone. And like, it's always the same because it's like, you know, you end up, the looting starts and then it's just, you know, that's another fucking conversation you could have for fucking hours, isn't it, mate? But, yeah,
so
I forgot where we're at now.
So then everything, so that's when everything really started,
yeah,
the success.
Yeah, so that's when I first started to get booked out in, like, Europe and stuff because, like, the EP had done really well. I started to get booked in. Belgium was my first ever out-of-country gig.
Do you play more overseas rather than the UK?
Yeah. And my career, yeah. My career's always been like that. Like now it's obviously slowed because after COVID, and it's of my own fault as well, really. I've slowed down a lot, but in general, I was always, America was always really good for me. Belgium was always really strong for me. Australia was arguably my strongest market in the world for many years. And, so it got to the point there where I was working at Morrison's while I was at uni to sort of like put myself through uni, like a little bit of extra cash and stuff. And I'll never forget, it got to the point where obviously the ball's still rolling. I'm releasing more music. I'm still releasing stuff on Styx. There's other labels getting involved and getting interested and stuff. And I remember getting offered my first American tour. And I basically said to Morrison's at the time, I was like look I need 6 weeks off, like unpaid. And they were just like, nah. I was like, oh come on, man. I was like, you know this music thing, like, you know, I've always been trying to do it, like I'm really open about it at work. Because I'll never forget, they got the little story on the side. When I worked at Morrison's, this will be a quick one, the manager was a fucking idiot, hated him. He was a proper pompous prick. And he knew I made music and he knew I'd be like, blah, blah, blah. And he always was like, oh, well, my mate's a DJ in Ibiza. Come back to me when he got a write-up in Mixmag, because his mate had a write-up in Mixmag. And I'm just like, always just, he just could never let anybody sort of have anything. He was always, you know, them sort of dickheads. And I'll never forget, I released an EP. It might have been my second EP on Styx. So a couple of years later. And my EP had a write-up in Mixmag. And it got like an 8 out of 10. So I was like, I'm fucking proud. And I'll never forget, I went into work that morning. I bought Mixmag from the shop in our little magazine section. And I went upstairs and all the managers are sitting there having their breakfast. And I opened it to the page. I literally dropped it on the table in front of him. I was like, there you go. And then he was like, oh, fair play, Chris, fair play. And I'm like, yeah, fucking dickhead, like, fuck you. Like, I was so, like, I'm not that sort of person, but that day I fucking was. And I was like, more than happy to be that person as well. And, so they knew I was doing the music thing. And like, I said to them, like, you know, 6 weeks off unpaid. I was like, you know, I don't ever expect you to pay me or anything. And they were like, basically, no. So that's when I had to make the big decision of like, right, do I try and do music full time now? And like I ummed and ahed. And then in the end, I was like, yeah, fuck it. I was like, oh, because if I don't go, I'll regret it for the rest of my life.
Yeah,
and now I will.
Yeah.
And so I did it. And then literally like the rest was history. Like that was it then. Like I basically lived off music for the next sort of up until now. Do you know what I mean? So.
So that's a lovely Chris. Love him. We was going to hopefully do it in person, but he couldn't get down here, sadly. So, but yeah, he's a good boy, Chris. But thank you for listening. If this is your first time listening to my podcast, hi. I did one with Funk Case as well. If you've come here through Chris, then you'd probably like the Funk Case one. I did one with Ruska. I'm getting a few of my musical buddies to come on actually to talk about their lives and stuff, because DJs have lives too. I've done loads of podcast. The last week's one was the story of a woman who was a squat raver for years in Hackney, which was just amazing because I really never knew anything about that life. And yeah, there's loads. Sorry, I'm yawning. That's rude, isn't it? But yes, I'm boring myself. Anyway, I'm gonna go. Have a lovely Sunday. Part two is out next week. Subscribe and share. Sharing is caring. And yeah, check out other episodes. I've talked with some lovely people.
Work.
But big up. Stay safe. Stay sane.
Work.
Big love. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.